This is Luxury.
And Diallo.
The hosts of One Song. And we'd like to thank the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of the world's funniest comedians. This is Comedy Gold Mines with Kevin Hart.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Nick Kroll, everybody. Nick Kroll.
Thank you, Kevin. Hi, how are you?
How you doing, man?
I'm fine. I feel honored. I figured like you were like, who physical stature-wise is a close match for me? So I, like, he may be a little taller, but he's probably still got some short guy energy shit. So he's going to come ready to go. He's going to want to deliver. He's not going to want to, you know, rest back. Like, you know, like, and you figured this is a safe bet.
How tall are you, Nick?
I am 5'10". I'm almost 5'10".
Oh, Jesus Christ.
If you look at Wikipedia, it says 5'9", but I want that I want and deserve that half an inch.
You know who are you just looking at? I said, how tall are you, Nick? You looked at five different areas of the room that you're in to tell me how tall you actually were. What happened?
Because I used to say 5'10", and then it got on the internet that I was 5'9". And so I felt like, you know what I mean? So then now I'm stuck in that. I want that half an inch. I don't remember who had that joke that was like, if someone says I'm almost 5'10", they're 5'9". What about you?
Guess what? I'm 5'4". How's that make you feel?
For real?
Yeah. How's that make you feel? Talking about your extra inch at 5'9" to 5'10", and I'm over here at 5'4" dealing with it.
Yeah. But for every like inch there, we're talking like another special. We're talking millions of dollars. You know what I mean?
Something would have had to happen. So I definitely would. If I had got to 5'6", I would have played ping pong professionally. My wingspan would have been good enough. I would have went to ping pong. Nick, you know, I think I'm basically, for our listeners, some may know you, some may not. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan. I like you just because you've always been you. Very funny fucking comic. Very smart guy. And now you found success, man. You found multiple different levels of success because you've constantly worked, Nick. You've constantly fucking worked in this business. Right now, one of your I don't want to say your biggest because I don't know in your mind what your biggest, but one of the things that I know people rave about and they love you on is Big Mouth, which was on Netflix.
Yes.
Tell our listeners where else might they know the legend of Nick Kroll from?
Where else would they know? I had a sketch show called Kroll Show on Comedy Central people liked it. Okay. You know, let's be honest, Kevin. Let's be honest. 3 seasons. I ended it myself, but maybe I ended it because I thought maybe they would cancel it. So I put it out. No.
Let's not downplay the Nick Kroll show. All right. Let's not downplay it. Here's
thank
why.
You.
All right. To do sketch comedy after so many people have done sketch comedy, sell a premise on sketch comedy and execute what you sold. In this day and time, it's very hard to do, especially in the space of sketch. And you did it. You did it successfully, like you said, for 3 seasons. That's nothing to be frowned upon.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate that. And it's I did that. I was on this show called The League on FX. FX show about fantasy football for a number of seasons. And then I've been in a bunch of we did an animated movie. We did Captain Underpants together.
Yep.
I was, of course, Professor Poopy Pants.
Poopy Pants. Professor Poopy Pants. Yes, yeah. I remember you.
And then a bunch of other animated movies, stuff like that. I don't know. It's weird. It's now weird. How am I feeling? Here's something I respect about you, Kevin, that I wish I had more of, sort of, is you are not afraid to talk about what your accomplishments are and what you're doing well and what you're proud of. I have a little more, I'm a little less comfortable doing that.
Why is that?
I don't know.
What do you
mean?
Can
I be honest with you?
Yeah.
I think I think that like black comics are more comfortable touting their accomplishments than like a white comic like myself is.
Oh, you're going to jail for that. Jesus Christ. I can't believe you just said that. You're going down. Oh, let's my do God.
It. This
oh
is how I want to go out.
Oh, they're going to get you. Oh, you're going to fucking get God for that. No, I'm joking. How crazy is that? That's the it. Times we're in. When you say so, oh, no, I can't believe you just.
Thank you. Good night. Thank you. Good night, everybody. This has been it.
You know what? Here's what I'll say. I'll say within our culture, and of course I'm talking about black comedians, whether it's male, female, whatever. We tend to love any amount of success that we get simply because it's so hard to come by.
Right.
So when you talk about, you know, the idea behind speaking on your accomplishments or the things that you've done, well, because it's crazy that you actually got put in the position to do it. Mm-hmm. Because it's hard as fuck to do it. So when you look at the comedy club scene, you look at the mainstream comedy club scene versus the urban comedy club scene, well, the urban comedy club scene was created. Like, we found bars, we found taverns and bowling alleys to fucking convert into comedy nights. And on the mainstream, they had comedy clubs. So as you start crossing over and doing things, it's like, shit, let me celebrate this. I'm actually fucking doing it. Like, mm-hmm. the things that people didn't expect me to do, I'm doing it. So that's where the conversation comes from. And then after that, I think there's a level of confidence attached to it. But I don't think that there's a reason for you not to have that high level of that high level of confidence, Nick, when you're in a creative business and you continue to be a part of the create. Like, you're not a sit down and I hope it comes to me comic or entertainer. You are a, hey, I have an idea. Hey, oh my God, man, I have a voice. Hey, man, I'm good at animation. Oh shit, I can do several voices. Wow, this is something else that I've tapped into. You strike me as a person that truly understands the benefit of putting work into the craft. For that, you gotta celebrate.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think it is. I agree. I mean, I think like I definitely have not been a person like I definitely never thought I was always like scared. You know, so much of ambition comes out of like a lack of it, weirdly out of like insecurity of being like, I'm not going to get cast. Like, I don't like I'm like there's like 1,000 other fucking Jewish guys who think they're funny out there, mm-hmm. like who are very capable. I can't wait to go get cast in something like. So it was always like go out and make the short film or go like do the little whatever it was leading up to and then creating shows along the way. And then I think, yeah, and that definitely benefited me. And I think that I wanted to, I think it's, I've always just tried to be like, this is like, you know, I'm doing this thing, but I don't want to just be like, I fucking accomplished this. I got this. We're on season 4 of the show, dot, 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 dot. And I sort of sometimes I envy it because there's nothing to be embarrassed about. In fact, the opposite of like, I've accomplished this, this, and this, you know, mm-hmm. and I want to do more and I am ambitious, like, you know, like, and it is keeping on finding that niche of like, what's the new thing that I want to do or what's the, like, because when Kroll Show finished, we did 3 seasons and I was like, haven't you felt like, I was doing the league and I was doing Kroll Show and I was physically and creatively exhausted at that point. Mm-hmm. And like, I needed to shut it down. Like, I ended Kroll Show. I pulled back on the last season of the league and settled down and was like, what do I want to do? And then my friend Andrew Goldberg, who I grew up with, known since I was in first grade, came to me with the idea of this animated show with this, our partners, Mark and Jen. And it was like an animated show about kids going through puberty. And I was like, yep, that's it. And I felt like I finally had the space again to creatively to do that
and execute.
And then, mm-hmm. and then Mulaney and I started working on Oh Hello, these characters that we've been doing for years. But then we decided to make a stage show of it that we did off Broadway. Then we toured and then we brought to Broadway. And that was also, I think, because I had freed up that space. And that's I go back to you being like, have you hit those points where you're just like, cause you do so much constantly. Do you feel drained at any point? Like,
there's a different thing. Like, you just said something that that stands out? And you was like, you know what? I felt like I had to shut it down. You know, for me, just, it was just too much, you know, and I don't know. I wanted to shut it down. Mm-hmm. There is a level of fear with being uncomfortable for me, mm-hmm. right? My hard work, my energy, my drive is put into my business to find a place of comfort for me and my family overall, right? And the place of comfort for me is success. And that success just continues to grow. It's a new level of success every day. Mm-hmm. And personally, that's my drive. That's my energy to wake up in the morning outside of my wife and my kids. That's what I'm putting something into. So I find a value in having a purpose in life, in mm-hmm. something that I love to do. Mm-hmm. I've never gotten comfortable enough to go, well, it's too much for me. I need to just relax for a second and shut it down, because I find so much joy in the, I gotta go, I gotta do, oh man, I got this thing. Now, as you get older, I'm fucking 40, 41 now. How old are you, Nick?
I'm 42.
42. Whoa, yeah. Eat shit, you're old.
Yeah,
Jesus Christ,
I'm older
man.
Than you, bro. I'm taller yeah. than you and I'm older than you,
all
bro.
Right, that's enough. Let's just stop there. God damn it. Just took a turn. A real bad turn for the worse, and we just brought it back. I got him back for all our listeners. Nick is back.
Yeah.
The one thing that I now do think about, Nick, is the end game. And the end game for me is a real timeline of when I'm going to tap out and say I'm done for good, because I've reached the ultimate level of comfort and success for me and my drive and my mental. If I didn't have the drive within something, then I think I probably would have experienced the feeling that you're talking about, but I've never yet experienced the feeling where I didn't have the drive. Does
but
that
there's
make sense?
No, there's no halfway for you. There's no like either you're all in or you're out.
Yeah.
Like there's no like pull back a little bit.
Yeah, I've never been doing something and then I say, you know what, man, let me go ahead and take the foot off the gas a little bit. Let this ship sink a little bit. I'll pull it back up at the end. But right now, man, I'm fucking tired. My mind hurts a little bit. I've never done it. And I've never purposely taken projects that were bad. I mean, I know there's people that can probably say, well, Kev, you got some bad shit floating out there, but I never purposely took a thing that I thought was bad. Everything I took on, I thought was good. Have you ever taken something, Nick, that you thought was fucking bad?
No. And I think, look, like, not really. And I have the distinct advantage of having grown up like white and privileged. So mm-hmm. like, it's a slightly different game in that, like, I've had this advantage throughout that, like, I've only had to take on things that I wanted to do, that I was passionate about. It was a gift in a number of ways that my parents gave me. And so I have not had to do that, which has allowed me to choose specifically about what I'm passionate about and only do the things that I'm now. It turns out that I am incredibly excited and passionate about the things I do. So I jump in and I have like a very big appetite for it. I want to do a lot of shit, but I don't, but it has meant like, you know, like early on, I mean, look, when I moved to New York, like I was doing commercials, like in radio voiceover shit and was, you know, like nonsense stuff that I was taking. And it was nonsense stuff that wasn't always good, but it was like, I saw what it was leading to or needed tape. Like, you know, I was like trying to get tape when I first moved to New York. These guys I went to college with were doing one of those like 24-hour film festivals. Like, you know, mm-hmm. where there's like, here's a premise. You got 24 hours to make a film. And I was in a film as an actor with, and it was like, we were both like, the film was like a weird home invasion where we were both like sexually assaulted in this like 24-hour film. And it was by a friend of mine. I was like, and like my friend, like,
well, he went so dark.
Yeah.
He went
so dark
out the gate.
It was not
man.
A comedy at all. It was like my friend was the actor who was home invading me, like basically sexually assaults me in this video. And I spend like months trying to get my hands on that tape, a DV tape, so I can try to put it on my reel. You know what I mean? Like, so there was stuff like that. I was like, this may not be my best look, but I'm just trying to put something together. You know what I mean? I'm trying to put something together.
Here's a question, right? So you say, yeah, you know what? I grew up, I was, you know, I had the benefit of being, you know, white and privileged. My question to you is, did you always know that? Did you always know that and understand that? Or has that recently kind of been highlighted because of the temperature of today's times? Like, is that something that you were aware of?
I was always aware of my privilege. Mm-hmm. Like, as like a growing up, like with money, like in my family, I knew that. I always knew that.
How big was the family?
What's that?
How big was the family?
I'm the youngest of four kids.
Oh, wow.
And parents
fucking.
Yeah. Parents were fucking, bro.
Fucking.
Wow. And still fucking and sending me tapes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just good for them.
Yeah. No.
Good for them, man.
It was a very like loving, supportive household. All the kids fucked each other. You know what I mean? It was one of those
happy houses. I got you.
Exactly. So I knew that I knew I was privileged. I think the whiteness has been something that I was largely in the broad, like we all knew on some level. I was like, oh yeah, well, we're white, so it's better. But like, it definitely the last more than just the BLM and this summer with the George Floyd murder. Beyond that, it's the really being in our big mouth room for the last five or six seasons and really trying to put together a truly diverse writing staff and with different points of view, both racially, sexually, gender.
Yeah, because you guys go there. You guys touch on it. You touch on it all on that show.
We try to go deep on it. And I think the last few years, it's become clear from, you know, like we cast a white actress to play a biracial girl. At the time, we were like, well, it's fine because she's half Jewish and Jenny's Jewish and Maya plays my mom and Maya is mixed and she's playing a white, you know, we thought we were playing with all of the stuff. Mm-hmm. And then as the seasons went on and we started to dig in on this character, Missy, who is biracial. And at first she was just a dorky girl who happened to be mixed or happened to be black. And I think as we dug in more on the character, the more that we started to talk and realize like, oh, your racial, even if you think of yourself as a dork, your racial identity plays like a huge role in, especially comes in talking to our friends and writers about what it's like when you hit puberty, like what your identity, what your racial identity begins to take form and who you are in a way that maybe it didn't when you were younger. And we started to want to tell more stories about Missy's racial identity, and that became much more difficult with a white actress at the center of it. Jenny was the one who decided, it's something that she had been uncomfortable with for a little while, and then the throes of BLM that she was like, I don't think I can do this anymore. And we were like, yeah, we get it. We talked to our black writers and some of our black talent on the show. And they were like, Jenny's been great. Missy's a great character. But it's time for her to step back. We support that. And
wow.
And then we did it, you know, and it's like, okay, great. Let's do it. You know, like, let's just do it. Like,
it's dope that you guys were not just supportive, but I can say like the wheels are starting to turn of just understanding. And I think when you said what you just said now, the first thing that I said, that's dope to hear, you know, to hear you say, yeah, you know, I'm a product of, and you know, that gave me the opportunity to do. And now because of that, I'm able to, you know, I'm able to pick and choose and be a little more selective. And, you know, granted, I work hard, but I am aware. Whereas some, of course, aren't or haven't been. And I think within a climate, within a culture, and just the power of so many opinions, I think it's great to hear people understand what's going on, understand the temperature of today. That was dope. I like that.
Thanks. So we're all done now? I got my compliment.
No, we're not done. Okay. But what we will do, we will take a commercial break, because here's the thing, Nick. This show is real. I do commercials and everything, right? And I know you're thinking to yourself, God damn, man, Kev is really laying it down during this interview. Well, I just want to let you know that's what the fuck I do, man.
Mm-hmm. This is Luxury.
Andy Allo,
the hosts of One Song. Shout out to U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this podcast and for giving our recording studio a sustainable makeover.
Just like music is made of notes and beats, each eco-friendly choice we make contributes a single note that completes the overall melody. That's why Heartbeat and US Soy are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets.
To see our podcast studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on @HeartbeatAudio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
You said family of four. Where are you at? You the oldest, youngest?
What? I'm the youngest of four. What about you? Where are you at?
It's me and my brother. I have an older brother, 8 years older, and my dad has two other kids. Mm-hmm. Now, people always tell me, like, those are your brothers and sisters, but I just refer to them as my dad's other two kids.
Did you guys grow up with each other at all or no?
No. It was separate households. You know, we didn't spend a lot of time together.
I'm sure that was easy for you, and there are no scars or any residual feelings about any of that at all.
Yeah, no, Nick, I don't really give a shit about that stuff. We're black. We deal with this all the time. Okay. All right. That's a white people thing. You guys get emotionally triggered by
trauma,
stuff like this.
Yeah, trauma is specifically white people.
I can't
people.
Believe I had a brother the same age as me and I never knew about it. I shrugged my shoulders.
I like your white, by the way, your white guy voice is great. It's a different take on it. It's just more of, it's not a that. It's just a pitch up.
It's like, come on. It's like,
good boy. That's a good white guy voice. Always innovating with Kevin Hart.
What does Nick want to do now? Right. Boy. What is your want in this business now?
Well, I just started a production company.
Congratulations.
And Big Mouth. Andrew and Mark and Jen, who we created that show with, have an animation company called Brutus Pink. We're doing a spinoff at Big Mouth at Netflix now of Big Mouth called Human Resources, which takes place in the world of the monsters, like the hormone monsters and shame wizards and depression kitties, and it's like a workplace comedy.
Ideas come from, like, are you weed smokers, are you coffee drinkers, do you cocaine? What is the thing that you guys are doing? That's
what I do, Kevin, in the morning is I do hot water with lemon.
There you go.
And then I dust a blunt with cocaine.
There it is.
and then I just sit down with pen and paper and I just start to
here it comes.
Yeah, I just write manifestos.
Here comes the rush.
I write threatening letters to CNN and then I take a 7-hour nap. I wake up
and repeat. Yeah. It's the same thing.
It depends. It depends over time. Like, I definitely, like, my writer's room on Big Mouth, we were in a room together. Now we're all on these Zoom things. I smoke some pot sometimes to kind of come out a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. like look 30,000 feet. But the ideas hopefully happen organically out of things, but definitely will pop out along the way and try to get a new perspective on things. And this show happened very organically out of Big Mouth. And then I started a production company for myself, live action, called Good at Business. Mm-hmm. And I'm just working on helping other people tell their stories. I mean, I've watched you've been doing it for a number of years, and I like the idea of trying to help other people get something off the ground using the experience I've had making shows and films and stuff like that, and also just giving myself, similarly to what you're saying, of like a little bit of like, oh, I might not always be an actor. I might not always be a comic. Mm. Like, what can I do to like keep a business going that maybe allows me to stay home? I just got married and you know, like,
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's the biggest thing that I feel that comics, this is a major step that sometimes gets ignored, you know, especially from, you know, the number of comics that experience high levels of success, right? You have some that tap into the world of business or the world of opportunity outside of the joke, the stage, or the work for hire. Mm-hmm. And you have some that just don't. But you know what you just said, I think, is extremely important that I really want my listeners to hear. And that's, you know, when it's all said and done, if you do choose to not do anymore, well, you still would love a revolving door of some kind of income, of some kind of brand that exists, of something that, you know, you not only worked hard to build, but that still stands. It still stands with or without you. And that's extremely important. You know, it's dope as hell to create, but the best part about, for me, Nick, mm-hmm. with having the production companies and, you know, the different entities, you're providing jobs. You're providing jobs. You're giving people an opportunity to feed their households, their families, their friends. You're also opening up, you know, whatever doors for the new waves of talent. Like you just said, you're 42. I'm 41. We're getting old. This time is flying. I can't tell you where the fuck it went. I remember being 25, but I don't remember. I remember. But I don't remember. It's fucking weird.
It is weird. My 20s are a real blur for me. Not because I was like partying so hard or like that I was like having the time of my life. I just don't really remember it very well. Like, I think it was just trying to hustle to get something going. And then I did feel like my 20s were like trying to set the table. The 30s was like starting to eat. You know what I mean? And hopefully the 40s are like, you know, the main course and dessert. And then 50s on is just like farting up a couch somewhere. You know what I mean? I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
You really don't know, but I like the thinking space that you're in. I really do. We're with family right now. You said you just got married.
So married in November and having a baby soon.
Oh, wow. Holy shit.
First child.
You did it right away.
Yep. It was the conversation was like we knew we were going to get married. We knew we were doing it all. And then it really became like, you know, the timeline with the pandemic and everything going on. It was like, are we going to wait to go get married and then wait another year? And then we just sort of felt like, we know we want to do this. The world is crazy. This feels like the right time for us. And honestly, like having a kid in the middle of all, I mean, it's been crazy. In the middle of a pandemic
I had a pandemic baby.
You did? How was that experience? I had a
pandemic baby.
Yeah.
Little P. That's what I call it. little pandemic baby.
Little PB.
No, you know what, man? It was crazy because of the hospital situation, of course, because of COVID. Yeah. So, you know, her mother wasn't able to come and be at the hospital. My kids weren't able to come. It was just me and her. You know, it's fine because we're both there, but there is a certain energy that you're accustomed to and that you wanted around that we weren't able to have. But you know, we got a healthy baby girl, and that's what it's about, you know, a beautiful little baby girl. But she definitely is a little pandemic baby, as we call it.
So, well, I think there's going to be a whole generation of, I'm assuming you guys started that process before the pandemic. Like, we are square in the middle of it. And I think there's going to be a whole generation of these little PBs, these little pandemic babies coming out.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? Like a bunch of babies that are going to be able to say, wow, you were born 2020? Me too. Wait, pandemic baby. That's what they're going to say.
Yeah. And it's going to be like, new boomers. It's going to be the new baby boomers. It's going to be like the COVID boomers or something.
That's a crew of pandemic babies. That is extremely funny.
Yeah. Who carry a super strain of the virus that they can shoot out at any point that they want.
At any point. They have the strongest immune system ever.
This interesting thing. I think also for, and again, you, I think you've been navigating it for a while with your kids, is like, how do you you build a family? How do you have a family and keep growing your business and growing what you do? And like, how do you go on the road to go shoot a movie? How do you go do stand up? How do you go do all these things? Like, and also balance what your responsibilities are.
It's very simple, Nick. You got to say, fuck these kids. It's very simple. Okay. It's very simple. You got to make a decision. Mm-hmm. Right. And sometimes that decision is, you know what? Fuck these kids.
And where are you recording right now? And where's your son? Yeah.
Well, right now, I'm not able to say that when I'm home. My kids have booted me out of all of my spaces that I have in my house. So my little office, my son, he said, Dad, I need to just go to your office because if I stay in my room, I may be tempted to play my video game. He hit me with a forward reverse back move. He showed me authority and responsibility. So I had no choice. So right now I'm in my little bar area. And, you know, I'm doing my show from here. Whatever, Nick, listen, it's not about me. Okay. It's not about me. At the end of the day, Nick, I've been gone for long periods of times and I've had to deal with the feeling of not being there. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you got to prepare yourself for.
Yeah.
Feeling of not being there. If your job puts you in a position where you have to be gone. And sometimes doing the movies, you know, doing the movies or TV, especially in today's times, because of tax breaks and everything, you have to be on. And that's a thing that you gotta grow some thick skin for. You have to.
That's something that I have to figure out. Because I've never been faced with that. Like until you know, I got married, you know, I was in and out of relationships, but I was not, I've been very much able to just sort of make any decision I wanted to make about my career without having to kind of navigate anything but what served me best, you know? So now having a wife and you know,
you got and that a child married, on the- you got that married voice, man. Well, you can't do that. That's what you got now. Well, honey, you didn't talk to me about that. Oh, where do you get that? Where do you get your first one of those? That comes after marriage. Well, when are we didn't discuss that. Mm-hmm. You used to go, yeah, but I thought it was just, you know, no. Honey, but
look how nice the house is.
Yeah, yeah, that don't matter. You got to sit down, have your meetings, have your discussions.
Yeah, that is the, I think that'll be that. And we're pretty good at it. And she's, I mean, but it's, you know, for me, the part of what is so amazing about her is that she is very sure of like what she wants and needs in a good way. Like, and that's attractive to me. You know what I mean? Like I didn't want someone who was going to kind of, you know, roll over for whatever I needed. It's like, I want someone who is, and she's, you know, super talented and creative and does really amazing work in her own right. So, you know, like, you know, I'm, but it will be a challenge, I think, trying to figure out how do I continue to do the work I want to do and also take into consideration the other people now that are dependent on me and I'm dependent on, you know?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you, Nick. You seem nervous. You definitely seem nervous about this. You know, I don't know if you've had any discussions yet, but there were some moments where I saw real fear in your eyes. So I can only wish you the best here, man.
No, I'm nervous because it's been a long time since I had something completely new in my life. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like having a child, like being married, all that stuff feels completely natural. I have no questions about, and I don't have any questions about having a child, it's been a long time since like, it's a thing that I've never done before.
Got you.
I mean, like where you're like, you've got like what, 3-4 kids, your oldest
four kids
are like, and they're, your oldest kid's like a teenager, tween, like
I have a 15-year-old, I have a 13-year-old, I have a 3-year-old, and I have a 3-month-old.
Wow.
That's my rundown. And that's as crazy as it gets. But I will say it's the dopest thing ever. It's the dopest fucking thing ever. Nothing beats it.
Can I get, I've seen your baby's clothing. Can I get some of those hand-me-downs? Yes. Can I get some of those hard baby down?
Hey man, whatever you need, you can have. And I mean that, man. We got tons of shit. Tons of shit. When your time comes, please hit me so I can give you some of this baby. And I'm not even talking about hand-me-downs. I'm talking about new shit. Just new shit. I can definitely send you some stuff. You're going to get a very nice, a very nice baby gift from me.
That's all I wanted. That's the only reason I'm here, is to get that. I want like a, I want like an exercise baby exercise outfit. You know what I mean? Like when you get the kid in the gym, how quick? Is the three-year-old in the gym yet?
The kids come out on creatine. They just come out. My kids come out on creatine. They come out with amazing. They drink green juices out the gate. That's what happens with them.
Baby growth hormone. Are they on that BG?
The whole nine. I put them on it the whole nine. Honestly, you know what's crazy? My kids, well, my son, my oldest son, mm-hmm. he's active. He likes to work out. My oldest daughter, she'll do it, but she hates it.
Yeah.
But she'll do it because she likes to spend time with me. Mm-hmm. But my 13-year-old son, he loves it. So your kids really are a product of the environment. What they see, what they're constantly around, they cater to. You know, mm-hmm. how big of a family do you want to have?
I don't know. A couple kids, I think. We'll see. You know, like, I don't know. I think a couple kids would be ideal. I came from four. All three of my siblings have four kids. I have 12 nieces and nephews, so there's a lot of kids around. So I feel like they've taken care of the lion's share of delivering a big family.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, I think two is a nice number. I don't know. You had
two is
for
a great number.
Yeah. You had two for a while. Yeah.
Two's a great number.
Yeah.
Shoot for one of each.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see if I need to go in there and genetically modify them. You know what I mean?
That's really a thing now.
It's a thing really that
people do, man. I just can't even put words to it. Like the things that people do, you know, even my wife was having a discussion with her girlfriends and the conversation was based around one of her friends wanting a baby, but wanting a specific sign of a baby, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't want no Aquarius and they can't be no. So I'm only going to, we got to have sex during this time, because I can't have a Scorpio. But I don't mind the Pisces. I mean, a real conversation
mm-hmm.
based off of what the sign of the baby would be. I couldn't believe the shit that I was hearing.
Oh, it's coming.
I couldn't believe the shit that I was hearing.
And
I
that,
just put the glass against the wall and walk
and
out.
That's like the minimal of it all. Like people are doing some, I mean, people are fully genetically modifying their babies now too. Like you can be like, I don't want, and some of it's for good. Some of it's like someone has like a very serious genetic disorder that they don't want to pass on. They can now splice some of that stuff out. You know what I mean? Like epilepsy or something like that,
mm-hmm.
but they can also, but people are also now, I think, choosing, you know, boys or girls and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm going to try to have like a 5'4" comedic rock star baby. That's so I'm trying to figure out how I can genetically do that.
You know, the crazy thing, it's like, if I were to really discuss, like, the craziest thing for me is like when your kids start talking about doing what you do, that's the craziest thing. You know, at the end of the day, comedian, you know, we're comedians, you know, it's not like there's a sport attached to it, or, you know, doctors, teachers, police officers, firemen, like there's so many different things out there that people do and that they can choose from. The best thing in the world for me is, you know, my daughter is she's a lover of comedy. She's
really
a lover, Nick. She's a lover of comedy. My daughter loves comedy, wants to be a comedic actress, wants to dabble with stand-up. And that's like the biggest woe to me, is when your kids truly want to follow in your footsteps.
Does that excite you, or how does that make you feel?
It's mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. Like, because you don't prepare for that. Prepare for that. You know, I'm trying to give you all the tools that you need to do whatever it is you want to do in life. And when you start to voice to me that is do what you do, I'm going to do that, Dad. Well, that's goddamn instant tears.
Yeah. That's
instant fucking eye watering right there.
Yeah, for sure.
Got to get yourself together. Go outside. Sit in the car for 2 hours. That's my safe place.
At your phone. Fall asleep.
Yeah. Just go.
Do you ever find yourself? Do you ever do that? You come home like I pull up in the driveway and then sit in your car for like 20 minutes on your phone. Like,
what are you talking about? I have four kids. What is, I don't understand the question that you're asking me. It takes me 20 minutes to get out the car regardless. It doesn't matter.
I'm so scared. I got to put in a car seat today. I'm so scared, Kevin.
Which car? You know what? There's so many different car seats right now. You got to get the kind of snap in.
Yeah, that's what we got.
You got to get, they make it so easy. I call them, I don't even want to call them idiot proof. Mm-hmm. Because it's a step past idiot proof. It's a step past that they provide, where you just take it out the box and you go, oh, okay, I just clicked this.
Okay,
oh man,
good.
I did it. It's one
that's
of those.
It. Perfect.
Yeah, but then after that, it's so easy that you're like, there's no way the baby can be safe in this. It's like there's no way that the baby's secure. You keep asking people to test it because you don't believe it.
You're like, the baby is flying out the window in this
just
guy.
Pull a seat and tell me if you think that's in right. It's that easy. That you keep rechecking it. That's where it is.
This is Luxury.
And Diallo.
The hosts of One Song. Shout out to U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this podcast and for giving our recording studio a sustainable makeover.
Just like music is made of notes and beats, each eco-friendly choice we make contributes a single note that completes the overall melody. That's why Heartbeat and U.S. Soy are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets.
To see our podcast studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on @HeartbeatAudio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Within your world of, comedic friends, are you one of the last men to go and jump into the married train, or the first in your crew?
No, you know, I straddle a couple different. I mean, I'm a little bit in a few different circles because I come out of stand up, but I also come out of like sketch improv world, UCB and mm-hmm. stuff. So like, I have friends in all of these different crews of folks, and I have friends who are like, I have a bunch of friends who are older comedians, a lot of improviser sketch people who got married later and have had their kids now in their like 40s, and I'm a little younger than them. So but most of those guys are now married and have kids and then I've got a couple younger friends who are like married but don't have kids yet. I'm somewhere in the middle, but most of the people in my life at this point have gotten married and have kids.
And did that play a part in you wanting to step into that place? Like, I know you said, yeah, we've been together for 2 years. We both knew it was what we wanted. It was time. I mean, you know, did you guys put yourselves in that surrounding as a couple with other married individuals?
You know, not really. It was like, I think I've been pretty good about making sure that whatever I was doing something was for the reasons internal of not being like, oh no, I'm falling behind. I always felt like I assumed I would have children, but it was never like, oh my God, I cannot wait to have children. But I felt like if I met the right person that I would want to have children with that person. I did. And it felt like, I'm 42, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm not getting any younger here. Like, and like, you know, it's like these little spermies aren't getting any smarter. You know what I mean? I'm curious.
I'm shocked that you lasted. That's the thing. Like as a comic,
yeah.
You know, you to make it to 40 plus with no kids, that's an amazing thing.
Pull out game is strong, Kevin.
Hey, listen, that's an amazing thing. Jesus Christ, man. 40 plus, no kids.
Yeah.
And then got married and you did it the right way, Mr. Kroll.
Thank you. Well, I found the right woman, you know, like it. And I think I was similarly, like what we were saying about the comedy, like I had the privilege of waiting to be like, you know, who's the right person to do this with? And I don't want to do it until it's right. You know, I don't want to get married till it's right. I don't want to have kids till it's right. And because of the situation that I somewhat put myself in somewhat the situation I found myself in, I was able to do that, you know, like, and again, we all know it's like some of it's luck of the draw, you know? And I feel like I have been able to, you know, find someone who, yeah, I don't know. But I think most of my friends had started, like, it's become less and less cool to be like, once you hit 40, and we'd started dating by the time I was 40, but like once you hit 40, like it's not cool being at a bar. You know what I mean? It's like,
you start to see it,
you know, and especially when you're then, as soon as you're kind of well-known and you're famous, it's like, it's kind of cool. Cause you're like, hey, I'm kind of well-known. And like now, like women might be interested in me without mm-hmm. me having to do anything. Mm-hmm. But then you're like, but then it's also like, oh, but they also know they can go on Wikipedia and see that I'm 40. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm just sitting here at the bar again.
Yeah, I'm just sitting at a bar. Like,
last
like,
question you wanted the bars. Weren't you here last week?
Oh, yeah. Or like, or and being in LA at a bar and being like, oh my God, like I'm so and so's assistant. You know what I mean? And you're like, oh boy.
Oh my God. Your kid. You know what I mean? Your kid goes to my school. Oh God.
Yeah, yeah. What? And I'm like, this is no longer cool. This is not the vibe. Like, it just got less and less cool. And then I met the right person, you know? But I think it was, life is all about timing. It's like, how do you find the right person and that happens to be at the right time in your life when you're both in a position where you're like, yeah, let's do this, you know? Mm. And I think with my career as well, like doing, like I spent the last number of years really doing like Big Mouth and animation. I was on a tour last year. She actually inspired me to go back out because I'd done stand up for years, but I was largely doing it as like more of a hobby around town and fucking around. And then a couple of years ago, we were away. This was like Christmas, like 2 years ago. And she was kind of like, why haven't you done a special? And I was like, well, you know, it's like, I like to do it locally. I got other stuff. I got movies or TV or my show. And she was like, okay. And it sort of planted the seed in my head of like, maybe I should. And like, I set up a tour and I did a tour in 19 and middle-aged boy tour. And then I was going to go shoot
that's
the special.
A great name.
Thank you. And then I was going to go shoot the special, like do like 20 more spots, 20 more sets and, you know, like theater shows and then shoot the special in like June. And the world obviously fell apart. Like, I mean, I still don't know how you shot it. I still don't know how you did it. Like, I don't know how.
I found a way to work on a set. I spent about a little over a month and some change working on a set. And I said, I'm going to do it. Like, once again, it was one of those things where I gave myself a challenge and stepped up to a challenge and putting that set together, coming up with the material, getting it to flow. Like, that was a lot, man. It was a lot without comedy clubs, without theaters, without nothing. Like, that was a lot. It was a lot to put that shit together. So the thing was, is me doing it and being able to do it to where it comes off poised and still polished. You know what I mean? And with a point of view. So I would challenge you to not let that material go at any point and still, you know, consider figuring out a way to craft that into a special. You can't just lay it to rest at all.
Can I rent out your house and shoot it there? You've already figured it out.
Yeah, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. But you kind of just figured it out on your own. But it was just me just telling
I figured it out on my own, which is me figuring out on my own is me asking you, can I shoot that special in your house? Maskless, everybody indoors.
Okay, let's just put a pin in it. We'll just put a pin in it, come back to it, revisit it, and then, you know, figure it out.
I would like to go. I loved going back out on the road and touring and like, you know what it's like, that feeling of like, you know, polishing. It's like, it's different than shooting a movie or a show where you're like, you write it, you shoot on the day, you hope you got it, you cut it together, hopefully in the edit it comes together. The idea of like every night, same set, working on it, polishing, editing, cutting, moving the set around, like all that stuff. It had been a long time since I was like, let's go put this hour together. And I felt good about it. And I felt like I was almost there. And then I was going to do a bunch of shows, just polish it up and then shoot it. And then obviously the world changed. And I think I will go back to go out and do the special. But now so much of the special was a very personal look at my, it's called Middle-Aged Boy. It was about me being like, 40 and still like not having settled down, and all my family has settled down and my friends have, how am I existing inside of that? And then now all of this other stuff has happened, getting married, having a kid, and like being like, oh, I feel like that should now be integrated into this to make
it a
complete story, you know?
Yeah, she'll kill you. That's not your life. What what are you talking about up there? That's not who you are anymore. I know, but remember before when I had this stuff, remember? I just wanted to use this stuff. Remember? Yes. No.
No? Yeah, not okay.
Okay. I'll just figure it out. That's tough though. It's tough. I think one of the hardest things as a comic is to just let material die.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Especially if you got something that you're like, this is where what the weirdest thing is about killing your babies is stuff that you're like, but this is funny, but someone in your life is like, yeah, but it doesn't work in the set.
Mm.
You're like, but it's getting the biggest laugh in the set. And they're like, doesn't matter. It fucks up the flow or whatever. You're like, it's hard because it's so rare that you land on like a fucking a nugget. You know what I mean? Like we all have those jokes that are like, this is a good joke. This works every time, but then you just have those jokes and they sometimes come out fully formed. Sometimes they take a little work, but you can just feel an audience like light up in a different way. And it's tough to cut those off, you know?
I think it's one of those things where at this point in my career, when it comes to material, when it comes to the time that goes in to conjuring up material, putting some together and thinking about it, it's just like, I can't just do that and not have a end game for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when I do get to that point where I don't want the end game for it, well, then I'm just going to say, maybe it's time to just sit down and give it up. If I don't want to punctuate it and I'm just like, yeah, I'm just going to go up and fuck around. Well, eventually you fuck around and you put this fire together.
Yeah,
that becomes an amazing set. So you want to do that for how long before you put it to rest? Like every set has to die.
It does.
It has to be put down.
That's what, and I don't think people realize that about comics, that it's like you do this material until, in the case of like you or myself, of like you put a special out and then you're like, and now that is dead. Now that is laid to rest. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. It's like people almost act as if stand-up comedy is a song.
Yeah.
Right? Like we're the artists that can't go on the road and give you that one hit that you loved again.
Have you ever done it? Do you ever do encores? Do you ever do old material? No.
No. Would you know the ending of it? What am I doing?
I do some of your material on the road, some of your classics.
Wait a second. No.
And it works, Nick, great. The fight, Nick, in the bar, that Nick, fight in the bar.
Is, Nick, this is inappropriate.
I credit you on it.
But Nick, how long are you doing? How much am I stuck?
It's like 30 minutes, but it's
that's a set. Wait a minute.
Yeah, but it's not the hour. It's a set, but it's not the hour. Because then it's 30 minutes of my stuff. That's my stuff that I've written.
Yeah.
And then I close with 15 minutes of Rodney Dangerfield. And
wait a minute. No, wait. By the way, very funny. Very funny, by the way. Rodney Dangerfield is Nick Kroll as Rodney Dangerfield.
That's my closer.
It's very funny.
No respect.
Who have you? Give me your one encounter with a comedian that you hold on to that acts as a groundbreaking moment for you. Mm. Like, has there been a comedian that is giving you some advice or that you've talked to that has said some shit that has stuck with you throughout your career and that you hold on to?
Oh man, there's a bunch.
You gotta pick one.
I'll give you a quick story. That's,
if it's a
I'll
two,
give you a
or
quick
you
story that stuck with me, and then I'll tell you a different story that stuck with me in a bad way. And this wasn't even an encounter I had. But there's that show called like Iconoclast. It was Chappelle and Maya Angelou were talking, and Maya Angelou gave Chappelle a piece of advice that has stuck with me. She didn't say it to me, but it was like if you don't pick up the positive stuff affirmation of you, then you don't have to pick up the critiques either.
Okay. Wow.
And I found that to be really amazing. So like
that's strong.
So if you don't like, if you're not like, if you don't get your head too full of the positive reviews and you don't put too much weight on it, then the negative reviews don't hit you that hard either. Cause you just, all it is like, what is my barometer? What is it that I'm doing? I'm not going to worry about positive or negative, what people are saying about me. And I've held on to that. I think that's a really useful piece of advice. And she's one of my favorite stand-ups, Maya Angelou.
Well, wait a minute. Nick,
then, she's great. No. I do 10 minutes of her stuff. I do 10 minutes for poetry to warm
poetry?
Up the crowd up top.
I don't think that's stand-up.
I just play one of her speeches. I play her commencement address. So, all right. Here's a story that happened to me early on, and I don't know what you can tell me what the moral is of it. I was doing open mics. There's a place in New York in the early 2000s. There was a place called B3. It was just a bar in the East Village, Avenue B and 3rd. Maybe someone dragged you there for when you were doing shows in New York. It was like a, you know, one of those club bars, basement of a
intimate.
Bar.
Real intimate.
Intimate. Garbage. Garbage.
Yeah.
Stinky little basement.
Yep.
And I was there one night. It was an open mic. I had just been in another show. There was like five or six people in the crowd, and the waitress comes downstairs and is like, oh my God, Bill Murray's upstairs. So I'm like, okay, I'm feeling, I had a good set at the other open mic I had done. So I was feeling a little brash, and I go up and I ask Bill Murray, I went up to him. He's sitting there, I think with his son having a drink. He's like, and I was like, would you mind coming down? Maybe I'm a stand up and I'm doing, would you want to come down and watch me perform? Mm. And he was like, he kind of looked at me and was like, and I was like, I'm sorry to bother you. Like, I'm just a huge fan. Like, you know, like you're, you know, cause at that point, Bill Murray's like a fucking god to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and so I come downstairs and now I realize I'm in an open mic at like 11 PM on a Tuesday. There's five people in there. Even if I had the best set of my life, I'm going to fucking die. And I'm like, well, he's not going to come down. And then I see these like charcoal pants walking down the stairs, you know, and I'm just like seeing these, you know, like fucking Ghostbusters and Lost in Translation and the first half of Stripes and Rushmore, you know, and all that. And then he comes downstairs and he watches me and I get on stage and I've been doing stand-up for like 5 months and I freeze. I just completely freeze up.
Wow.
I have no material.
Wow.
And I can't prepare my jokes and I'm trying to apologize to him while I'm on stage. You know what I mean? And it goes terribly. It goes terribly. And I get off stage and he's standing there and I go, thanks for watching. He's like, yep. And he walks back upstairs and I fucking blew it. I mean, but also... So what do I take from that? Like I take, I do look back and I like that I was like willing to take a chance. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like mm-hmm. it didn't work, but I was sort of like, fuck it. You know what I mean? Like I'm not going to be scared to try something. But the other side of that was like, kind of know when you're asking someone for something, know when you're asking someone for a favor, know when you're like, I'm asking you to do this thing for me. Like know when, and also know when you're ready to be seen.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
The biggest thing for me is patience.
Yeah.
And understanding the importance of patience, right? Because a patient version of yourself could have gotten the same thing by saying, Mr. Murray, I just came up here to tell you I'm a huge fan and that one day you're going to see my face again. I'm a comic mm-hmm. as well. And you've done so much for me and my career by just inspiring me.
Yep.
Enjoy your meal. I don't want to disturb you anymore. I just wanted you to know one day you're going to see me again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if he came downstairs or not, you wouldn't have known because you would have just went down and you would have done your open mic night. And of course, it's easy to have these answers after the moment is over.
Totally.
But the 5 month comedian is extremely ambitious and knows everything.
Yeah.
The 5 month comedian. I mean, Jesus Christ, you got all the answers. You're ready for every big opportunity. You're ready to be a headliner. You're ready to travel the country. You're ready to go perform in Europe if they ask you. You can do it all. You can go to wherever. Yeah.
Yeah. Berkowitz is ready to book us, book some dates in Amsterdam. He's ready to do it.
Let's go. I'll fucking destroy it over there. Yeah. I don't give a shit.
But it's that so much of this career for me has been that is like, how do you manage that thing of like, I'll take any opportunity that's presented to me. But also I will be patient enough to do the things when I know I'm ready to do them, you know, like how do you find that balance between like, and I, you know, and it's a tough thing to find that balance, but that's so much of the career, I think.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a learning curve that is always going to go around. You're going to get more levels of understanding and education as you keep bending this curve. For me, I remember not that moment, but a moment where I had an opportunity to do a large comedy festival. And I was like, this is it. I got into Just for Laughs. Mm-hmm. I'm about to blow. This is it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a story that I've told several times. Keith Robinson, a mentor, a friend, mm-hmm. a brother,
yeah.
was like, you're not ready, stupid. You're not ready to go do Just for Laughs. Shut up. Sit down. Get funny. What do you mean? I am. And right there, it was a moment of, do I listen to Keith or do I not? And I was smart enough to go, he must be telling me the truth because he's my friend. All right, I'm not going to do it. And I didn't do it. I didn't do the festival. And I waited until I got in on the following year. And I was much better. I was a funnier comic. I was more polished. Yeah, you still green, but I went there and I made my presence felt. Whereas if I had rushed it, I could have possibly botched whatever opportunities were there for me just by wanting something too fast.
Totally.
So in that case, you wanted Bill Murray's approval so fast.
Yeah.
And it would have, you know, for you, the mental of him going, oh, very funny, man, very funny, would have been the equivalent of the fucking best of the best.
Sure. But also, like, but then it's like, so then what? You know what I mean? For him to be like, exactly. It's not like Bill Murray's going to be like, hey, you're yeah. the guy. Like, I've never, like, and I love Bill Murray to this day, but he's not like the guy who's like, let me take you under my wing. Like, Bill Murray's not a take you under his wing kind of guy. That's not his game, you know? So I'm like, even then, like, but you're right. It is, that's a ballsy thing. But again, that's an inner confidence that you had to be like, yeah, I'll be better in a year. I'll wait. Like, there has to be some level of like, there's a thing that there is a thirstiness that a lot of people have, which is like, you get grabby because you're like, you're worried it's going to go away or you're mm-hmm. never, it's not going to come at you. So like, how do you have enough self-possession to know, like, you know, I'm going to wait. Like, I couldn't get into Montreal. I was trying to get into Montreal for years. I couldn't get my fucking act in there. And then it started to happen. And then it happened the way it was supposed to, but it took a long time. And now, I mean, I was there, we were there last year. You got it for like performer of the year, or like mm-hmm. icon, or crazy. They made up some shit. So you would show up like flying for the afternoon and fly.
Yeah, it was right. It was the biggest boot to touch the Canadian. it was the fitted show within
yeah.
the
fitted the let's get Kevin here to give us some clout on Instagram award for best comedic powerhouse. But isn't that crazy? Are you able to take that step back to be like, fuck, I remember when Keith Robinson told me I wasn't funny enough to be there and I listened to him and now they're trying to figure out how to get you back there for some reason.
I promise you, I have analyzed all of that stuff several times.
Mm-hmm.
I've always done a good job at listening to the person that's been there before, if that person was willing to talk to me and tell me something about when they were there.
Mm-hmm.
I've never felt like I knew it all or I know it all.
Who's the person at this stage? Who has been the person that you've been listening to at this?
Absolutely nobody. I'm too famous. Nobody can tell me shit. No, I'm joking. No, there's still, you know, I still have great direction, you know. Information is key. So I surround myself by it. You know, the people that I have that are underneath my company's umbrella, I went and sought after it and had to pay a hefty bill for, you know, to get these people as execs, as presidents, senior vice presidents, TV execs, film execs. And as much as I, you know, I love having the minds of people that know things that are different from the things that I know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the direction and the idea sets off a bigger idea. So mm-hmm. I've never been a person to shut that down. I've always welcomed it, which is why on the other side, I try to give so much of the information as I possibly can, because that's the one thing that I feel like people are selfish with. You don't want to, like, there's so many comics that were selfish with some of the bookings that they got, mm-hmm. selfish with the comedy club opportunities or the college opportunities or mm-hmm. the gigs, because they felt like if everybody else gets it, then I'm not going to be able to get it. So there's this like crab in a barrel mentality mm-hmm. that has always existed that never has really had to, because ultimately there's enough for us all.
Yeah. And that's why I want to know who your NACA agent is and how I can get my hands on the baby clothes. That's what I need.
Done. This is information that will be given to you whenever you need it, Nick. I promise you that, man. I want to thank you, dude. I want to thank you for coming on. Like I said, this is something that I want to do because I want to give my listeners an opportunity to get into the mind of a comedian. Mm-hmm. You know, really understand how we think, how we maneuver, what our life is, what's of importance and of value to us, and just get to know the individuals more. You know, where there's a lot more to us than just the funny.
We're layered
individuals.
We're layered, totally normal human beings. Absolutely.
Totally normal.
Tall, well over 6 feet individuals.
You, my friend, man, you deserve everything that's come your way. I've known you and seen you just really flourish in this business for quite some time. And it's not an accident, man. So congrats on all your success. And again, thank you. Thank you for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Right back at you, Kevin. I have a tremendous amount of respect for what you've done and what you're continuing to build. So I'm happy to be here. Appreciate it.
My guy. Also, congrats on the new marriage and good luck with the communication of you getting out the house when you need to, buddy. Can't wait for you to see me and say, Kev, boy, what a shit show it's been. Yeah. Man, I just haven't been able to really get a handle on that leave thing. That was my second white voice. Did you see it? I gave you another one.
I like that. I appreciate that.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nick Kroll.
Comedy Gold Mines is a Sirius XM and LOL audio production. Executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, and Eric Weil. With Tastemakers Media, Emil Garner, and Ian McDonald.